are listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again to the program. My name is JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast of the third day of February. And as a heads up, if it's bright outside, if there's a big glowing ball of sun in the sky, and it's a weekday, that means we're live right now, which means you're hearing us live, ladies and gentlemen. We are doing this in real time, which means you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get into the chat room. I'm in the chat room amongst a bunch of the morning listeners, and love having you guys in there. Love having the feedback from the chat room. Get an opportunity to kind of go over the news with you guys. And if you guys have questions about things that are going on, it's a great opportunity for you guys to kind of reach back out to us here at the radio show. As I said and have said many, many times, the whole goal of the show is to create a forum so you guys, get this information that we're trying to get across to you from our amazing guests, as well as trying to keep you guys up to date about everything that is going on, around the world right now. I'm hoping that you guys are hearing me okay in the chat room. Lex, can you hear me okay, buddy? I don't know what's going on. Sometimes we have a little bit of issues, delays, things like that. But we are live, ladies and gentlemen, I promise. I hope that all of you are tuned in right now. Can't thank you guys enough for sharing the radio show. Also, thank you guys for sharing the website, redpillreports.com, with your friends. Also, for checking out the Facebook group. We are growing by leaps and bounds on Facebook, as well as scene.is. We have a group there too. You can find all the news that we post on our website at both of those locations as well. Gotta tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am ridiculously excited about today's show. Karen Udis is going to be joining us in about an hour. For those of you guys who don't know, she is a lawyer. She was a lawyer for the World Bank for a very long time. She has been behind the curtain of Oz, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you right now, behind the curtain. And ended up becoming somewhat of an international banking troublemaker, which is, that's one of the things we really like about this show, is we try and bring on as many of these whistleblowing troublemakers as we possibly can. But Karen Udis, I'll tell you what, she's got a background that is pretty daunting in terms of her experience, in terms of her education, things like that. And the subject that we're going to be talking about today is kind of a new one, actually, for Karen. This is, again, we were talking off air the other day, getting ready for today's interview. And I was kind of, it's the first time we're really talking, and I'm kind of giving her some of my insights on what I think's going on in the world and trying to kind of bounce ideas off of her. And I was trying to do it fairly gingerly because, again, she's a lawyer. She's got, bar association and under her belt, and she works for the World Bank. So, I kind of realized there were some things that she and I might not agree on, the way the fiat currency is actually funded, with our time, talent, and energy, little things like that, contract law and stuff like that. And I'll tell you what, I brought that subject of contract law up to her, and I could see through the phone line the light bulb going off over her head, and she started disclosing to me all of this crazy information about the illegality of the court systems, about the maritime jurisdiction, and about all of these things. And I'm just sitting here shaking my head thinking, oh my goodness, here's somebody who has come full circle, ladies and gentlemen, who was in the belly of the beast, who saw behind the curtain, who decided to blow the whistle on it, and then subsequently was ostracized from the group and decided to fight back, as most good whistleblowers do, and has now realized just how deep the rabbit hole goes. And I'll tell you what, when you start hearing about the depth of the rabbit hole from people like Karen Udis, man, you really need to stop and pay attention to what they're saying, because this is going to be a big one. We're going to be talking about a potential global currency reset, the plan B that we've been talking about with the IMF. She knows lots and lots about it. We're going to be talking about the Hilton Green Agreement, which is the agreement ostensibly signed by JFK a couple of weeks before he died. We're talking about a global trust of wealth, ladies and gentlemen, that apparently does, in fact, exist. And I don't even know where to go with that, but Karen has been uncovering all kinds of information about this global trust, and I'm telling you, there might very well be hope for humanity out there, and Karen is going to be part of that process, if not a very integral part of that process. So again, I hope you guys are out there and can hear me. I hope that you guys are going to get your friends and family involved with this show today, because this is going to be a big one, I'm telling you right now. And I'll tell you too, James Perloff will be on the show tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the dissolvement of the Cold War, or at least Cold War 1.0, as we moved into the War on Terror, talk a little bit about how that transition took place and try and figure out where we are now in terms of history, because it does seem like either we're getting ready for a Cold War 2.0, which a lot of people would say that we're in right now, and also this War on Terror seems to still be in the news pretty prevalently. We had the attack in Paris and things like that. So what's real, what's not real, where did all these agendas come from, and is there a traceable pattern here that we can all focus on and see through some of the garbage that they're throwing at us? I think that's probably what's going to happen tomorrow. James Perloff is an amazing historian. He's probably one of the more accurate researchers and well-documented researchers that I've come across. Great guy. Cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to that on tomorrow's program. And then Thursday, Stan Deo going to be joining us again. And I'm telling you, man, it's just got a crazy big week. The guys behind the scenes at Red Pill have just done an amazing job getting the schedule together this week. I love you guys. Love you guys. Stan Deo on Thursday. If you guys don't know who Stan Deo is, I'm not even going to go into it right now, because you must be living under a rock on Pluto if you don't know who Stan Deo is. But he'll be joining us on Thursday. And then Richard Sauter, we're going to have him all the way from Ecuador. It's going to work this time. I'm telling you. It's going to work this time. Richard Sauter, we're going to be talking about underground and underwater bases, going back through history, some of where that came from in terms of who is responsible for building these bases all around the world. And it's going to be, all of this stuff is tied together. It's amazing to me how every time we do a show, all of the issues, whether it's economic or geopolitical or religious, they all seem to start kind of weaving together. We're all starting to see part of the same story kind of enveloping or coming out of the envelope here. So that's what's going on for the rest of the week. Definitely appreciate you guys being here. We do have a lot of news to get through today, so I'm going to try and jump over to that section right now. But I do want to give you guys a heads up. If you guys are not checking out the show page at redpillreports.com, you're doing yourself a disservice, much the way I am when I can't seem to get through all of the articles that I try and get through for you guys every day. But again, I just wanted to give you guys a couple of little snippets of things that you're missing if you're not going to the show section at redpillreports.com every day. Today, for example, and this is just a smattering of the type of information that we here at Red Pill want to provide you with, but do you have a baseball bat at home, and are you worried that potentially your baseball bat maybe isn't quite up to the challenge of killing a bunch of zombies? Have no fear. Have no fear, ladies and gentlemen. We have found an infographic, a picture depicting six pretty sensible modifications that you can make to a baseball bat just in case we do find ourselves mired in some sort of zombie apocalypse. I'm just saying, it's in the news section, and I wanted to bring it to you guys because, again, I care about you guys out there. I care about your well-being, and if we do find ourselves mired in a zombie apocalypse, it's going to be every man for themselves and woman for themselves. I mean, that's just the way it is. Don't let the movies fool you, and maybe you'll want this information about how to turn a bat into an effective zombie-killing machine. So that's something that we should talk about today. Also, the idea about the Super Bowl being rigged, potentially. I had a little bit of a comment about that yesterday. Somebody sent me an article about EA Sports PlayStation game called Madden. And I didn't have any idea that this was a real thing, But apparently, Madden by EA Sports, pretty darn good at predicting Super Bowl results. I'll leave it there, but when we get into the science and tech section, I'm going to have to go through this story and elucidate you guys as to why I think there might be a little bit of suspicion that you could be levered towards or levied towards the EA group at this point. Just throwing that out there. There's also some pretty cool stuff in the science section today. 10 quick scientific facts that will blow your mind. I also have some pretty important health news. There's 6 common household items that actually cause cancer and are toxic. And we do stories like this pretty often, but the reason I'm bringing this one up today is because none of these items are items that I would have suspected as being toxic. So I'm obviously a target of this particular article because I have some of these things and wouldn't have even thought about it. So I wanted to bring that to you guys as well. So we'll be talking about that when we get over into the health section, which will most likely happen at the in the second half of the first hour today. And also, you guys probably won't believe who is picking up hitchhikers in Uruguay. It's a story that will absolutely make you smile, I think. Okay, anyway, that's some of the stuff you're missing if you're not going to redpillreports.com and checking out the show section every day. Because, again, I like to ramble in the mornings. I'm still kind of juicing up with coffee. And sometimes I don't get to all the news articles. And, again, you know, I wouldn't have put that stuff in there if I didn't think it was important to you guys. But, you know, sometimes I just can't get to all of it. Anyway, let's move on. Again, third day of February today. We're moving right along. It is a Tuesday. And as such, there's plenty of things to talk about. The United States and North Korea have been secretly having discussions, ladies and gentlemen. They're having discussions about the potential of having discussions about the potential of maybe getting together and starting some talks. And then in those talks, they're going to decide if they want to have more talks about getting together and talking about more talks. That is literally what this article says, ladies and gentlemen. So there are talks secretly going on between the United States and North Korea right now about the potential of future talks, which would then lead to potentially more future talks. And those talks will definitively decide whether or not the North Korea and the United States are going to be talking in the future. But what they're talking about right now, potentially after that long series of potential talks, is of course getting back into the non-nuclear proliferation debate that we've been having with North Korea for a very long time. Anyway, the State Department pretty much saying they would love to have conversation with North Korea, and apparently having secret conversations about how much they'd like to have those conversations about having more conversations in the future. Just trying to keep you guys in the loop. That's what's going on. Thousands of pro-democracy protesters took the streets of Hong Kong on Sunday for the first time since the mass demonstrations shut down parts of the city for more than 2 months. Of course, they just cleaned all that up and removed all the people from the streets a few months back. But again, this weekend, a sea of yellow umbrellas, which is the symbol for the campaign, moved slowly through central Hong Kong with crowds shouting for true universal suffrage. Most of the numbers were well below the expected 50,000 that they were hoping for, but they did say the numbers were around 13,000. Still a lot of people coming out into the streets. Authorities were saying at first that they were concerned that the rally of demonstrators were likely to once again try to occupy some of Hong Kong's main roads, which were again cleared of the tent camps back in December. But by late afternoon, the march remained peaceful. No sign that the crowds, including a lot of people again carrying those yellow balloons and umbrellas, planned to take back the streets. So again, the entire thing comes down to the fact that China has promised Hong Kongers the right for the first time to vote for their next chief executive in 2017, but it also ruled that nominees must be vetted by a pro-Beijing committee, and that proposal has been pretty heavily criticized by the activists, which led to the uprising there in Hong Kong, which came to an end in December. But again, we're still seeing people pouring out into the streets. I don't care if 13,000 isn't the target number they were after. That's still a lot of yellow umbrellas to contend with, ladies and gentlemen. So, moving on to the Middle East, ISIS is apparently getting desperate, according to human rights observers and State Department here in the United States. Right now, military analysts say that the Sunni extremists known as ISIS are really starting to suffer on the battlefield in terms of shortage of personnel. They are seeing a lot of signs that says that they are desperate. This is Scott Stewart, who's the vice president of tactical analysis for Stratford, talking right now. He said that the again, seeing lots of signs that these ISIS group are very desperate. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq reported last week that airstrikes undertaken by the U.S. and coalition partners had killed approximately 6,000 ISIS fighters since they began back in August. It's difficult to verify those numbers, but they did say, you know, initially in the region, their numbers were between about 12 and 20,000. So you could see how a loss of 6,000 would be fairly significant. And they're also citing the fact that the last group of fighters that were sent to Kobani from ISIS pretty much all consisted of teenagers, 15 and 16 year olds, which again, Stewart from Stratford says that that shows pretty clearly they're having a lot of trouble getting staff. So, is ISIS starting to crumble, under its own weight? Is it less successful than the American media would have us believe in their campaign through social media to, you know, to get people to come? Apparently that's what the State Department's saying. So there you go. Barack Obama had a pretty startling, admission, I guess would be what you would want to call it, on CNN just this week. He actually admitted to CNN's Zachariah that Washington, quote, had brokered a deal to transition power in the Ukraine, following on the heels of the deadly protests on Maidan and the Yanukovych then fleeing. So there you go. While Nuland's colorful conversation, remember Victoria F. the EU, Nuland, yeah, her colorful conversation a year ago told us pretty much everything we needed to know about the Ukraine's so-called democratic transition, but it's a completely different thing when the deal, quote-unquote, is administered by none other than the American president. So Washington power brokers desensitized to the concept of brokering political deals due to their so-called democratic work in faraway war zones like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya, are now employing the strategy inside of sovereign states that are experiencing internal discord. The real tragedy of this scenario is not necessarily that it happened, but that the United States and the Ukrainian people, it seems, believe that such a foreign invasion of pure opportunists on their territory constitutes democracy or will somehow lead to democracy in the future. But then again, the United States expected no less from the $5 billion it invested and a few cakes it put for Kiev's allegiance. And now the Ukrainian people must dutifully follow that foreign-built road to wherever it may lead them. That was a story coming from your Newswire today, which I think is very poignant and well written, but exactly what is going on there right now. UK, I'm sorry, I wanted to go back to Eastern Ukraine too right now. The rebels in Eastern Ukraine are mounting a mobilization campaign. They are trying to, mount a recruitment drive, which is supposed to mirror Kiev's own mobilization under Poroshenko. Remember, he said he wanted to get 50,000 troops, I think, drafted, able, what do you say, willing and able-bodied ex-military if he could find them, but non-ex-military if he had to. So anyway, you know, Poroshenko again trying to call up 50,000 troops to go and fight their countrymen in the east side of the country. Now the anti-government forces in eastern Ukraine have announced a recruitment campaign on their side. It's supposed to begin next week. They'd like to form 5 new brigades in total, 3 of them mechanized, and they say they do have the bases to train soldiers, and they think they can have it up and running by springtime. Reports from the ground indicate that logistic structures of the rebels are only right now partially functional, and conducting a full-blown conscription campaign amid ongoing hostilities may be too complex. They wanted to enroll and train up to 100,000 soldiers. That was, again, originally declared by the head of the Lugansk region there. But it's obviously clearly impossible right now in the war-torn region. And Kiev officials are cheering the news, saying that it indicated impending doom for the militias. I would have to take a pretty strong, you know, I don't buy that at all from Kiev. Kiev's obviously insane, and this is why. Okay, here's Ukraine's own mobilization campaign. This is the fourth time they've tried to mobilize from Ukraine into Kiev since they came to power in February. Right now it's reportedly stalled because potential recruits are dodging conscription officials. Hundreds of Ukrainian men are choosing to flee the country rather than be enrolled. Of course they are. That's exactly what we said was going to happen. You've got You're not going to be able to pay people to go kill their own countrymen. People do not fight like that for very long. They fight like that as long as the money's good and as long as they're actually not being shot at. But that's not what's going on in the Ukraine. We're trying to pay people to go kill their own countrymen that 4 months ago were part of the same country. And so probably not going to be successful, and you're not going to beat the principle of people who feel oppressed. That oppression is going to win hands down forever and ever. And you kill them, you're just going to make more of them, and you're just going to run out of people to pay in Kiev. So again, this idea that that Kiev is going to be successful against the Eastern Ukrainian rebels is just ridiculous to me. Iceland, here's some goofy news. Iceland is building the first temple to Norse gods since the Viking age. And maybe it's not goofy news to you. I didn't mean to, pigeonhole anybody there, but I just thought it's interesting because they're actually building a big temple. But Icelanders now will soon be able to publicly worship at a shrine to Thor, Odin, and Frigg. When construction starting this month on Iceland's first major temple to the Norse gods since the Viking age. Worship of the gods in Scandinavia gave way to Christianity about 1,000 years ago, but a modern version of Norse paganism has been gaining popularity in Iceland. The organization, man, I'll tell you, I have trouble saying Russian words sometimes. There's no way I could live in Iceland. There's so many accents on these letters. Anyway, if you look up Norse pagan religion, you'll probably be able to see it. It's 38 characters long and it has two vowels and it starts with an A. There you go. Good luck with all that. But anyway, the temple will host ceremonies such as weddings and funerals, and the group will confer names to children and initiate teenagers, similar to other religious communities. Iceland's neo-pagans still celebrate the ancient sacrificial ritual of blot with music, reading, eating, and drinking, but nowadays they leave out the slaughter of animals. You know, and I'm totally fine with anybody doing anything they want to worship whatever, as long as we're not, hanging up little kids and bleeding them out, drinking their blood, stuff like that, which I know goes on still, ladies and gentlemen, so don't laugh. And I don't think they're doing that in Iceland, so at least not at the new Norse god cathedral thing that they're building. Anyway, moving on again, back to the Middle East. Saudi Arabia on Sunday beheaded another fugitive or another criminal. This one was a convicted murderer and a Saudi national. This brings the total number of people executed since the new King Solomon took office to 5 total. This is continuing the kingdom's use of the harshest punishment, and the sentence was carried out in the holy city of Medina. This is 5 people now that have been beheaded under King Solomon. I don't know how they do that over there. Is it a guillotine that they use? I find that to be pretty interesting. Especially after what's going on here in our country with capital punishment not working out very well. I think, Oklahoma tried to kill somebody the other day and it took them like 3 hours to die and just awful. So maybe guillotine a little bit humane. I don't know. Let's, move into the national news right now. There was a suspicious device found yesterday duct taped to a bridge in Atlanta. And, so they called in the bomb squad. It was a tubular device. Tubular, I guess would be the operative word here. It looked like a pipe bomb, obviously duct taped to one of the support columns on a bridge there in Atlanta. I like that picture, rattlesnake. See, if you guys are not in the chat room, you're missing good stuff. It's not just an online me sitting here talking type show. We got lots of stuff going on in the chat room too. Truthfrequencyradio.com. Get in the chat room. Come join us. Okay. Anyway, it only took a couple of seconds to detonate the suspicious device that closed down the downtown connector and caused 2 hours of traffic nightmares on Monday afternoon. Although it wasn't known what the device was, and the southbound lanes were quickly reopened and the northbound lanes followed after the area was deemed safe. But a passerby called 911 after spotting the tube packaged duct tape to the east side of the 14th Street Bridge shortly after 1 p.m., again forcing police to close down the downtown connector just before 2 p.m., and 2 hours later, the bridge was still closed. They did detonate the device. It did turn out to be innocuous. Again, not an explosive device, but somebody definitely wanted people to think that's what it was. And so, that's what happened in Atlanta yesterday. Glad everybody ended up safe over there. Comment from the chat room. Civilized people still use swords. I don't know. Lex, honestly, you gotta go check out the news section today because this weaponized baseball bat article. I'm leaning away from swords right now. Although I do agree with you, melee weapons do have their place, and I think we should bring them back. I also think we should bring back jousting. You know, football, that's cool, that's a sport, whatever, manly, kinda, whatever. That's, you know, rugby for people that want to wear pads. But jousting, boy, that'd be a sport I would totally watch. And I'll tell you, I was talking to my buddy Robert the other day about sports, and we got on the subject of baseball. And I have to admit, baseball to me, terrifically, terrifically boring. It's just one, you know, if I want to take a nap, back when I used to have a TV, I would put baseball on and fall asleep. But here's an idea. And I'm just throwing this out there for you guys. This is an idea, I think, that would drastically improve baseball as a sport. I think baseball could be improved if just every once in a while, you know, every 6 weeks, 8 weeks or so, randomly during a game, they just released a live lion onto the field. Think about how much more exciting baseball would be. You'd see how fast those guys can actually run. You'd bring a whole bunch of dudes up from the minors. That is a sport I would actually watch, you know. Oh, he's going back for the fly. Oh, he's mauled by a lion. Oh, man. Totally would love to watch that. Anyway, so if anybody out there wants to start a real sport, lion baseball, let me know. I'd definitely want to have season tickets to that. Okay, moving back into the news. Lots of stuff going on. Release the lion Thursdays. Exactly. I think that would be genius. And, you know, I also think we might as well bring back the whole tossing people to the lions thing to deal with this whole, banker, criminal, cartel, gangbangster, cabal issue. I think we should just get people in a big field, stadium, and again, just bring back the gladiator days, but don't give them any weapons. Just throw politicians, the people who have been destroying the world for so long. Love to see that happen. Anyway, I digress. Union workers were on strike for a second day on Monday at 9 U.S. refineries and chemical plants as they sought a new national contract with oil companies covering laborers at 63 different plants. The walkouts were the first in support of a nationwide pact since 1980 and targeted plants with a combined 10% of U.S. refining capacity. One of the plants, Tesoro's Corporation, they have a 166,000 barrel a day Martinez, California refinery. It was being shut down because it was in the midst of planned maintenance work. Yes, into the Kraken pit. Exactly. Sorry. I'm going back to the chat room, guys. The other refineries appeared set to continue running normally as operators initiated contingency plans, calling on train managers to, as replacement workers in the United States. U.S. gasoline and diesel fuel prices rose on Monday over on concerns over supply as well as a bounce in crude. So why would the prices rise if workers are striking and the supply is going up? Again, this whole fundamentals in the economy thing just doesn't make sense in my brain anymore. Anyway, guys, we're gonna go to a 3-minute break. We're gonna come right back. Thank you guys, all of you in the chat room. Thank all you guys who are listening at home and on the radio. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. As I said, we'll be right back. Aaron Udis joining us in about a half an hour, guys. Keep it here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable.
Saturdays on True Frequency Radio.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for being here with us this morning. It is 10:30 right now, Central Time, straight up. We are live right now, and we're having a pretty funny conversation in the chat room, I must admit. We're talking about which politicians we would throw to which creatures in what pit. Somebody suggested throwing Boehner to a bunch of badgers. I thought that'd be pretty mean to the badgers, so I suggested trying to remember the name of the monster from the Return of the Jedi. What was the name of the monster in the pit under Jabba? I think we should try and employ a monster like that. Is it Rancor? Luna, is that the name of that thing? I can't remember. But if that was it, that's my vote. We get that big monster from Return of the Jedi and we put him in a pit and we start throwing some of these criminal banking cartel members into it. I think that would be a series that would probably be pretty successful on TV. I mean, that's a reality show I'd like to watch. I don't know about you guys, but that's just me. Anyway, for the break, we were talking about, the large, steel worker and refinery worker strike that's been going on. It's still scheduled to be happening today right now. And as such, oil futures and crude oil actually dropped about 3% yesterday. This is the largest refinery strike again since 1980. It could potentially affect about 60% of the U.S. market if, more unions join the walkout right now. So again, could have some more effects on the economy and things like that. And we'll talk about that stuff when we get over into the economic news section in just a few minutes. I want to give some good news out there. I love it when I get an opportunity to give good news. And as a secondary thing here, this is good news coming out of St. Louis. And a lot of you guys know I grew up in St. Louis. I got a lot of friends in St. Louis. So anytime I can report good news from St. Louis, especially in lieu of everything that's going on right now, I really like to do it. So right now, there is a bill that is scheduled to create a 7-member civilian oversight board for the St. Louis Police Department. And it does look like it is a sure bet to pass next month when they actually have this vote. The majority of the Board of Aldermen and even Mayor Francis right now are attaching their names to it, so it does look good. But as this bill was being discussed on Thursday last week, Jeff Rorda, who is a spokesman for the St. Louis Police Officers Association, while that bill was being discussed, he decided to assault a woman while wearing an I Am Darren Wilson bracelet, and his violent outburst may have stolen the headlines for the day, but there are also some really good news that were coming out of the union rep there during the debate over this particular bill. So Rorda announced, and again, remember, he is a spokesman for the St. Louis Police Officers Association. He announced that the St. Louis police officers will quit the department or do only the bare minimum on patrol if the city creates a proposed civilian oversight board. He goes on to say they would answer their calls when they got them. But as far as interrupting criminal behavior on their own, why in the world would they want would they want to do that when their employers aren't even supporting them? Rorta even goes on to say that nobody wants to be the next Darren Wilson. Well, Jeff Rorta, nobody wants to be the next Michael Brown either, you idiot. Okay? So considering the fact that much of the brutality we see begins with the officers stopping and harassing people for no reason, this threat that he is levying on St. Louis is actually a pretty major win for the city, guys. So following the murders of two police officers in New York City, the NYPD staged a near work stoppage, right, in political protest. And had the officers done this to rejoin humanity and take a stand against enforcing bad laws and harassing people for victimless crimes, they could have been heroes. But unfortunately, they were just actually crybabies who wanted to be able to maim and kill without anybody questioning their integrity. But during that slowdown, officers vowed to, quote unquote, arrest people only when necessary, right? Admitting that the majority of arrests by officers transpire simply for revenue generation. That is a theme that we will continue to harp here at Red Pill Reports forever. Arrests in the city dropped by 90%, and the citizens of the city save $10 million in parking fines per week. It's the greatest part of the entire ordeal was that the police proved that they can stop going out searching for people to harass, and the city will not crumble into chaos around them. There was no chaos, no mass destruction. In fact, by all accounts, the city seemed entirely peaceful and normal. Again, citations for traffic violations fell by 94%. Summons for low-level offenses like public drinking also plunged 94%. Even parking violations were down 92%. Drug arrests down 84%, right? So is this a reason? It is for this reason that everybody should support Rorta's little temper tantrum there in St. Louis and support their protest. In fact, police departments nationwide should join them in solidarity and only make arrests when it's actually necessary to do so, because when police departments protest, the rest of us win, ladies and gentlemen. So again, fantastic news stemming from Mr. Rorta's temper tantrum. And again, he just doesn't want civilian oversight. He doesn't want anybody there knowing what is going on with these police officers. And I think, and I know a lot of other people agree with me, I was talking to Mr. Stuart Rhodes yesterday, and he completely agrees with me. We don't need law enforcement. We need voluntary peace officers, heavily supervised voluntary peace officers. Half of the fire departments in our country are voluntary. There is no reason we could not do that with law enforcement and be just as successful, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying. Okay, I digress. Moving on. President Barack Obama has quietly handed out an extra 5.46 million work permits for non-immigrant foreigners who arrived as tourists, students, or illegal immigrants since the year 2009, according to federal documents released by the Freedom of Information Act request. The executive branch apparently is operating a huge parallel work authorization system outside of the bounds of immigration laws and limits written by Congress, and which inevitably reduces job opportunities for Americans. This is, of course, according to Jessica Vaughn, who is the policy director at the Center for Immigration Studies. She obviously was the one who filed these FOIA requests. The true magnitude of how often President Obama has evaded the limits set by Congress on foreign workers has never been known until now, she went on to tell the Daily Caller yesterday. And if Congress wants to take back its control of our immigration system, it needs to control the issuance of work permits, which have been the vehicle for Obama to get around the legal limits on immigration and work visas imposed by Congress. Now, today, Tuesday, senators will vote for or against the budget measure that would sharply limit Obama's ability to award another 5 million work permits to illegals via the Department of Homeland Security. And Obama promised to hand out the next 5 million work permits as part of his unpopular November 2014 executive amnesty, which also largely ends efforts to repatriate the 12 million illegals living in the United States right meow. So apparently, lots more illegal workers in the country than we were aware of. And if it was not for FOIA requests, at the behest of the policy director at Center for Immigration Studies, we would not have known about that. We would not have known about that, ladies and gentlemen. So, a good thing that there are people out there doing their jobs. And, as an ancillary to that story, President Obama yesterday unveiled a nearly $4 trillion budget for 2016. would offer financial relief for the middle class, boost investment in areas such as infrastructure, and aim to reduce the federal deficit and debt, according to senior administration officials. Officials said the plan, which was released yesterday to the public at about 11:30, was intended to balance higher investment in government programs and inspire fiscal discipline. Yeah, fiscal discipline. I'm just going to leave that there. We're moving on to some other stuff right now. Okay, let's see what's going on in the markets right now. Dow Jones is way up right now, 182 points up, sitting at 17,543. That's a 1% gain. Gold has had a significant pullback today, sitting at 1260, down nearly $40 from its highs just a few days ago. Silver, $17.20. We'll get you some silver today. Let's check out what is going on in the Forex too. The euro dollar matrix, dollar sliding a little bit against the euro today. Euro coming back to about 114, and your Bitcoin rate right now is down. I'm sorry, Bitcoin actually up a little bit today, $232. We'll get you a Bitcoin right now. I wanted to talk a little bit just quickly about a couple of other cryptocurrencies. I realized someone sent me an email yesterday and said, you know, you talk about Bitcoin, but we don't talk about the silver, and we don't talk about Darkcoin and things like that. So I just, hey, you know, you're right. Darkcoin has been on the rise recently. Darkcoin is another Bitcoin-style cryptocurrency, I guess you could call it, and its volume has been increasing recently. It might be something that you guys want to look into right now, but again, Darkcoin has been rising, and it's up about 11% so far this year in trading. And also Litecoin, a lot of people compare to silver, where Bitcoin would be gold, Litecoin would be silver. Litecoin right now trading at about $1.75, but a lot of people projecting that it could reach the $2 mark here pretty quickly. And you know, is Litecoin or Darkcoin going to have a big play in the cryptocurrencies in the future? Probably, because there have been quite a few cryptocurrencies that have come and gone. You know, the Reddit coin came and went away the other day. There's been the Doge coin came, and I don't know what's going on with that. I don't believe it's really taken off to the moon. But despite Bitcoin kind of going through the turmoil, a couple of these other coins like Litecoin and Darkcoin have really held in there. So maybe if you're looking to diversify and you think maybe cryptocurrency might be something you want to look into, Litecoin, Darkcoin, and Bitcoin might all, you know, might be things that you guys are wanting to pay attention to out there. another Bitcoin startup too has happened just over the last day. So, you know, one of the big issues that Bitcoin faces throughout its existence has been that many traditional businesses and institutions just don't take it seriously. They look at it like something that attracts scams or illegal activity, and they don't understand the innovation that the blockchain can bring to the digital world. So whenever a Bitcoin company is able to raise a substantial amount of money to further secure its place in the world of virtual business, it's worth noting. Okay, so recently there's been a startup called Bonafide, and it managed to raise almost $1 million through a special funding round, and the money is slated right now to be used to build a reputation system for the Bitcoin industry, and its reputation is always something that Bitcoin industry needs to be enhancing. So again, just keeping you guys in the loop, a lot of companies still throwing a lot of weight behind Bitcoin, despite the fact that it has been hovering around that $200 mark for a long time, and it does seem to be trending downwards. But you know, Overstock coming out not very long ago and agreeing to sell things in Bitcoin, that's pretty big. And also the fact that they, are now talking about paying their employees in Bitcoin. That's also pretty big. So, you know, is Bitcoin going to find a level of parity for how they're able to mine it and what it's actually worth on the market? I think that's probably going to happen in the future. I don't know necessarily that it'll be worth more than $200, but, you never know. You never know with things. I want to talk about Greece here real quick too. Just because I have a little bit of time, this was a fantastic article submitted by Charles Smith of Two Minds blog. And he's essentially saying that, well, Greece has basically exploded the empire's Death Star of debt. There's really nothing left to negotiate except the official admission that the imperial Death Star of debt right now, which is the most fearsome threat in the galaxy, has been essentially blown to smithereens by Greece and this election that happened just the other day. So he emphasizes three pretty fundamental points, mostly because they've been lost in the hand-wringing, fear-mongering, and ceaseless chatter of the propaganda shills. But first of all, number one, okay, impaired debt and defaults result from imprudent underwriting and lender incompetence slash greed? So since when did it become an accepted policy to reward imprudent lending, incompetence, and greed? Classical capitalism is very clear on what should happen to lenders who ignored risk management. They go away. That's how classical capitalism is supposed to work. There's really not anything complicated about it. Capitalism requires the discipline of losses being taken by those responsible, the firing of incompetence, and the destruction of imprudent lenders. That is apparently what we're supposed to be seeing, and of course what we're not seeing. So let's set aside all the propaganda for a minute and let's get real. Anybody with the slightest knowledge of Greece's finances and the power structure of the Greek economy and society know that it is insanely risky to loan Greece billions of euros. No one can deny this. Yet, however, somehow the lenders deserve to be paid for their avarice, stupidity, incompetence, and total disregard for the standards of prudent lending. No! They deserve to be destroyed, closed down, and their assets auctioned off. That's what needs to happen. So number two, Greece will not be wiped out by leaving the euro currency. It will be freed to rebuild itself. That's what needs to happen again in every single economy around the world. But it will be, again, free to rebuild itself with prudent fiscal management and policies that reward investment and penalize risky borrowing, speculation, and corruption. Here's the thing about Greece issuing its own fiat currency. It would not force fiscal discipline in a way that the euro did not and could not. I'm sorry, it will force fiscal discipline in a way that the euro did not and could not. This is why the Greek status quo is quivering with fear right now. The gravy train of irresponsibility enabled by the euro is ending, and they are terrified of living within their means and having to face the discipline that the actual market would impose on the Greek currency. If there's one thing that Greece needs more than anything, it's the discipline and rewards of the market. And I cannot possibly agree more. The hundreds of billions of dollars of euros in so-called bailouts did not help Greece. All they did was bail out imprudent lenders and the Euroland elites. Virtually none of the vast sums helped the Greek nation or its people. What little did stay in Greece flowed to the kleptocrats and continued to rule Greece. So again, Greece just blew up the Death Star of debt. And now the threat has been lifted from other debtor nations suffering from the yoke of imperial misrule. The Greek elites and kleptocrats are terrified of the discipline that leaving the euro will now impose. And the general public should welcome this transition to an economy and society that has been freed from the shackles of imperial debt and the kleptocracy that has bled the nation dry. Well, well said, my friend there. You can find that article again in redpillreports.com under the show section, but a lot of people definitely seeing an uprising happening all around the world. These people are sick and tired of being under the thumb of the IMF and the Bank of International Settlements and all this garbage. And I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to get to the bottom of it in about 15 minutes when Karen Udis joins us. We are going to be talking about some things that you guys are not going to be expecting, and this is going to blow your mind. I'm telling you right now. Okay. What else is going on in the economy? Well, there's the Intercontinental Exchange will be now administering the London Bullion Market Association Gold Fix starting in March when it replaces the London Gold Fix, which has been used since 1919. Again, they are getting rid of the London Gold Fix and replacing it with the Intercontinental Exchange, going to be administering the LBMA Association, London Bullion Market Association Gold Fix starting in March. Big ancillary story to that is that Chinese banks are going to be among those in talks to take part in that replacement for the century-old gold-fixing benchmark. No Chinese companies have ever directly participated in the 95-year-old price-setting ritual that takes place twice daily by phone between four different banks. Crazy that that could ever get corrupted, right? Anyway, the ICE Benchmark Administration was chosen in November to run the replacement after silver, platinum, and palladium ditched daily fixings last year. Chinese gold demand has more than doubled since 2009. What do you think is going to happen to the price of gold when China gets involved with the price of gold? Because, and what do you think is going to happen if they remove the gold dollar peg? Woo, buddy! I think we're going to see some major moves in the gold market. And a lot of people in hedge funds are pretty bullish on gold right now, more than 2 years. Hedge funds are the most bullish on gold than they have been in more than 2 years right now. Spectators and speculators increased their net long position by 80% already this year, according to government U.S. data. So a lot of people out there betting really strong that the bull market is not over in gold, ladies and gentlemen. So is it true? I don't know. We see a pretty big pullback today. Could it be profit-taking? I don't know. It's just so hard to say anymore when there's no fundamentals Okay, so we were talking a little bit about sports earlier today, and I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether or not the Super Bowl was rigged or not, but I'll just say this. If I am one of the people who produces Madden for EA Sports, I would quit my job and go out and buy lottery tickets all day long. You guys have to hear this. This is completely insane. So I didn't realize this because I don't play video games. And as a side note, I think if you're over the age of 30 and you play video games, you should automatically lose your right to vote. That's, I don't vote, but I'm just saying if you do, and you play video games, there's plenty of better things you could be doing with your time, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, there is a game made by EA Sports. It's called Madden NFL. It's a very, very popular game. It is, you know, a lifelike, football simulation game. So you can play your favorite sporting athletes or whatever, but they also have a simulation. So you can turn on Madden and you can hit the game simulation and it'll play every team and every, conference all the way up through the Super Bowl, right? And so last year, up until last year, Madden had actually boasted an 8-3 record at being able to predict the winners of the Super Bowl. Okay. As of this Super Bowl, that record increased to 9-3 following the New England Patriots win over the Seattle Seahawks. However, the way that this year's Madden Sim predicted the outcome of the Super Bowl is a little bit scary. Okay. So let's just start with the final score, right? 28-24. Which the Madden Sim guessed exactly. Yes, that is impressive. But it gets better, okay? The Madden Sim predicted that Tom Brady would win the Super Bowl MVP, which he did. They also predicted that he would pass for 335 yards and 4 touchdowns. Brady finished the game with 328 yards and 4 touchdowns. The simulation missed it by 7 yards. As for the game winner, the Madden Sim also predicted that New England would trail 24-14 in the third quarter before staging a comeback, capped by a game-winning touchdown pass to wide receiver Julian Edelman. Yeah, Madden nailed that one too. The simulation actually had Edelman finish as the Patriots' top receiver as well, with 8 catches for 106 yards. Edelman ended the Super Bowl with 9 catches for 109 yards. Translation? Yeah, Madden Sim is kind of good at predicting Super Bowls. Is that, I don't know if that's a really good, translation there or not. Or is that astronomically and statistically not possible, ladies and gentlemen, that they could be that accurate on all of those statistics in a game that was produced over a year before the actual Super Bowl was played? Yeah, I think Obsidian, you in the chat room, that sounds like rigging to me, brother. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, what do you say to that? That's real life. That's actual facts, actual statistics from the game. How do you argue with that? That's kind of difficult to say. I don't even know. Okay, moving on. Dish Network potentially on the hook for $920 billion worth of fines. That's probably a high estimation right now. But the fine for a single violation of the TSR, which is the telemarketing sales rule, can be a whopping $16,000. And Dish Network has been accused of violating the TSR and do not call registries a catastrophic 57.5 million times by the Department of Justice on behalf of the FTC. And several or simple multiplication would tell us now that the Dish Network could technically be facing a fine of $920 billion, although they'll probably end up settling for a whole lot less. But Dish Network in the doghouse right now. Also, there is a website that went away a while ago. It's a website I don't know anything about, never been to, have never, I couldn't even tell you anything about it if you asked me, so don't send me an email and ask me about this. But the Pirate Bay, apparently, traveled down a pretty bumpy road as of lately, along with a lot of other prominent piracy sites. But the Pirate Bay was taken down in a raid a couple of months ago. However, like the aftermath of Superman's death back in 1992, no one truly felt that the Pirate Bay would be dead for very long, and a lot of pretenders rose to claim the throne in the interim. But more than 7 weeks after its demise, the Pirate Bay has risen from its own ashes, sporting the symbol of a phoenix to mark its return. Yes, that is awesome. Apparently functionality is returned to the site, quite similar to the way it was in the get-go there back in the day. The usual pirate ship graphic that emblazoned the front page has been replaced by a phoenix signaling the site's return. And right now, much to the joy of users, the site is not quite capable of dishing out ads yet. So again, I don't know anything about torrents, have no idea what the Pirate Bay is all about, but possibly to some of you out there, it might be very good news that it is back, ladies and gentlemen. And I digress. How about 10 quick scientific facts that will blow your mind? This will blow your mind. There is enough DNA in the average human body to stretch from the sun to Pluto and back 17 times. Think about that for a second. We had that discussion about the breakthrough at Harvard the other day where they were cramming major amounts of digital information into DNA. Think about how much digital information one person's genetic, you know, program could actually hold. That blows your mind. How about the average human body carries 10 times more bacterial cells than human cells? That is true. It can take a photon 40,000 years to travel from the core of the sun to the surface, but only 8 minutes for it to travel the rest of the way to Earth. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. At over 2,000 kilometers long, the Great Barrier Reef is the largest living structure on the Earth. There are 8 times as many atoms in a teaspoon of water as there are teaspoonfuls of water in the Atlantic Ocean. The average person walks the equivalent of 5 times around the world in a lifetime. That's crazy. And when helium is cooled to almost absolute zero, the lowest temperature possible, it becomes a liquid with very surprising properties. It actually flows against gravity and will start running up and over the lip of a glass container. Just crazy. Anyway, there's more stuff on there. Do you know it takes 60 seconds for a blood cell to make a complete circuit of the human body? I had no idea. Very cool stuff. Anyway, that's all in the science section there under the show section today. There's also a really interesting article about a woman who is hoping to be the first woman to give birth on Mars. She is part of a project called the Mars One Project. This project has been initiated already. They are trying to start sending, in 10 years from now, they're going to send 40 people to live on Mars for the first time, and she's hoping she'll be the first person to give birth to a human being on Mars, or to, you know, give birth to the first Martian, I guess would be what she was doing. And to be perfectly honest, she kind of looks like a Martian anyway. That might be a little mean, I don't know. But again, I call it like I see it. That's why you guys come to the show. She kind of already looks like she's been to Mars. Anyway, lots of other stuff in the tech section too. I'm not going to get to any of the health stuff right now, and I apologize for that. I'll give you some heads up here. There are 6 common household things that cause cancer. I'm going to jump into that because I did promise that I would talk about that in a minute ago. Let me find it. Here we go. Air fresheners. Had no idea. Full of poisonous substances can leave you and your loved ones infertile, brain damage, or chronically ill. These are, of course, the aerosol spray air fresheners. Real bad for you. Candles apparently also full of paraffin wax, which when burned generates 2 highly toxic compounds, benzene and toluene, both of which are carcinogenic. Art supplies on this list. I didn't have any idea art supplies, but a lot of epoxy materials, glues, acrylic paint, solvents, which makes sense. Drawing utensils, things like that can contain chemicals linked to allergies, open organ damage and cancer. Of course, shampoos and conditioners, that's huge. Toxic cosmetics is a huge issue today. A lot of conventional consumer products you don't want to use anymore. Antiperspirant deodorants. The big one on this list that I was surprised about, shower curtains. Again, off-gassing, all kinds of toxic VOCs. But if you have a shower curtain and it has a very unique new shower curtain smell, that new shower curtain smell might be hurting you, ladies and gentlemen. So again, lots of health news, lots of tech news I couldn't get to. I apologize about that. But go to redpillreports.com, get into the show section, learn a little bit about Karen Hudis before she comes on. You guys are not going to want to miss this. We got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Keep it right here, you guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Don't
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy? And ecstasy? Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys, all of you who are in the chat room carrying on a conversation with my during the break. It's fun to have some feedback there. And if you guys have questions for our guest today, Karen Udis, that is a great place for you to post them. I will try and relay questions during the interview to her if anything comes up. I have to tell you, though, I have been so excited about this interview for days and days, ladies and gentlemen, because Karen Udis is kind of one of a personal hero of mine. And I'm not saying that lightly. It's often that I feign excitement for some guests. Of course, none of the guests that have been on the show yet fall into that category, but I have feigned excitement for some before, and that's not what's going on today, ladies and gentlemen. So those of you guys who don't know Karen, she studied law at Yale University. She also studied economics at the University of Amsterdam. She worked in the U.S. Export-Import Bank from 1980 until 1985, and then transitioned to the legal department at the World Bank from 1986 all the way up through 2007. She established a non-governmental organization committee of the International Law Section of the American Bar Association and the Committee on Multilateralism and the Accountability of International Organizations of the American Branch of the International Law Association. So to say that this young lady knows quite a bit about the legal process would be an understatement, to say the least. So first and foremost, Ms. Karen Udis, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Thanks for having me, and just call me Karen.
Okay, Karen. Now, a lot of people out there are probably fairly familiar with your story, but we do get new listeners all the time. So I want, if you could just talk a little bit about some of your experiences at the World Bank and then how you were kind of forcibly transitioned into, well, an excommunicated international banking troublemaker, as it were, if you would please.
Right. I started out actually always as a troublemaker.
Yay.
Which is to say that I went to Holland deliberately between my junior and senior year in college. I went to NYU as an undergraduate because I was very upset about what was going on in Vietnam. And so I was looking for a place to go after I graduated, and I thought, so I went to Europe, And that was where I discovered that I had opportunities, and I had applied to law school, but I really, my heart wasn't in it. And so instead of going to law school, what I did was I accepted Harvard because I wasn't sure I could find a place in Europe. So I accepted Harvard, and then I wrote them a letter saying, Dear Harvard, I think I'm sticking around in Holland. I've been accepted at the University of Amsterdam.
Okay.
And I might reapply. But I had always known that my first choice was Yale. It was just I accepted Harvard in case I couldn't find a place in Europe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Harvard wrote back and said, Dear Karen, you said you were coming and then you changed your mind, so you can always reapply, but we'll never reaccept you again.
Oh, wow.
So that was actually fine by me, although my mother was very upset, and
right.
And you know, my father was okay with it. But anyway, so they refused to send me my winter clothes, and it gets cold in Holland.
Yeah.
So what I did was I bought a blue sailor's sweater, which if you're in Holland, you know what those are. They're very thick, and they're, you know, they've got a high neck. And I just wore that every day with my jeans. And I went biking around to the University of Amsterdam, and I loved there. And I learned how to speak Dutch after my first year.
Nice.
Which is hard because the people in Holland speak such good English that especially when you're first starting out, they're always talking to you in English, and you have to just answer them in your broken Dutch right. until after a while. And you know, the hard thing about learning to speak another language, and English speakers don't really do that. They've been spoiled by the rest of the world. But the hard thing is not to care whether you're making a fool out of yourself.
Hmm, right.
And so I never care if I'm making a fool out of myself. People have seen me make a fool out of myself many times. But that's all right, because after a while you get the hang of whatever it is you're trying to do.
Yep.
And people really welcome the fact that you're taking the trouble to speak to them on their turf.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I've been working on from the beginning to the end, is to try to figure out what the turf is. We've been involved in turf wars.
Yes.
And hidden turf wars. And so if you show that you're willing to meet people halfway on their turf, that's really what you have to do in just about any turf war.
Yeah.
You cannot maintain your supposed edge or superiority. But on the other hand, you also have to be disciplined and respectful and see what it is that people are trying to get you. You know, when there's a turf war, you have to be prepared to go on other people's turf and see what that turf is.
Right.
Or get people, you know, who can give you a guided tour, because you're never going to get the expertise that people who own that turf have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's, you know, that's pretty much an introduction to what I've been doing. But I've been gathering credentials because people like that. And then at the end of this, you know, you call me a young lady. I'm a little longer in the tooth than that. But the thing about credentials is that they've been very much misused.
Okay.
Because what I've discovered with the help of a lot of people who have been working with me, what I've discovered is that there's a whole reality is a lot different from the way it's presented to us.
Boy.
And there's a deliberate attempt to bamboozle everybody
yes.
into thinking that this false reality is the real deal. And a lot of people have now understood that no, it's not. But the fact of the matter is that these professions, these credentials, they're giving a seal of good housekeeping on this false reality. And so two of the professions that are really screwing up the world are the legal profession and the accounting profession. And we have unmasked them. And what I was just doing today was it turns out that when people go to court in the United States, they think they're going to a real court where they can assert their rights under what they think is, in effect, the right. Constitution. And it turns out that without their knowing, when they signed their bank signature card, there was a little fine print underneath, and, you know, we were discussing this yesterday, mm-hmm. about how the people are tricked into giving their consent to something. When you sign your signature card, underneath in very fine print, it says subject to bank rules. And if you go and see what the bank rules are, in the bank rules is a hidden contract whereby you are consenting to go to a different court, which isn't the real court.
Right.
And I found this out because a man who had been the clerk of the court in New York named George Mercier uh-huh. wrote about hidden contracts. I found this out because somebody sent this to me. And the reason they sent it to me is because they saw that I was flailing around and making a fool of myself. And I didn't really understand what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was willing to admit, no, I needed help. And therefore, the fact that I have been willing to acknowledge that I needed help and also willing to show that I wasn't on the high ground, that I wanted to understand where I was more than anything else. I didn't care if I made a fool of myself in finding out where I really was. And the most important thing I had to learn was that I didn't have a monopoly on being right. I liked the idea of being a goody two shoes, but I had to recognize that I was always going to be fooling myself.
Mm-hmm.
That I was probably not such a great person that I was liking to think that I was. That I was hiding the things that weren't so great and not confronting them. It's just human nature to be that. It's, of course. There's something called a Johari cube, which is think of four quadrants.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those quadrants is the thing that you know about yourself that everybody knows. And the other quadrant is the thing that you know about yourself that nobody knows. And then there's another quadrant, which is the thing that you don't know about yourself, but other people do. That's usually the bad stuff. You don't want to admit it.
Right.
And then there's the fourth quadrant, which is the thing that's true about yourself, but nobody knows it. All right. We're never going to manage to do anything about that fourth quadrant. So just leave it alone. But we can reduce the size of the quadrant where people know things about us that we don't know. And the only way to do that is to be open to hearing about those things that you don't want to admit.
Right.
And one of the things I've learned in being a whistleblower, and then we'll get into some of the heavy things that I've been learning. But just the ability to admit that you're wrong, that you have it wrong,
mm-hmm.
that you're not so great is what you need to do in order to move and get things better, which is hopefully what people want. Now, there aren't always people that want that, but then it's kind of like think of a two-year-old. You just have to get these people that don't want things to be better. You have to minimize their area of influence.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're living in a world where those people that don't want things better are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to take that, we've got to take that away from them. And
right.
There are more of us that want things better than those that want to maintain things as being bad. So that's, and we're right now at a point where we know how bad the system is and
mm-hmm.
who's making it bad.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. And we're in a point where, and we're much stronger than those people.
Yep.
And so, every day I tweet, which is to say I also put things out on the social media.
Uh-huh.
It's been what people call an info war, which is, when I got fired from the World Bank in 2007, I did not understand that what people call the mainstream media is owned by a banking cartel. I didn't
right.
know that. So
wow.
it took, I didn't know it. I was ignorant. But I was willing to learn, and that was the point. So I ultimately did learn. And now I'm able, I've got enough people that understand that I've, fortunately, I got into the very heart of the international financial system.
Uh-huh.
And people understood that I, you know, that I wanted to learn. And so they were teaching me. And I also got some very valuable information before I went to the World Bank. And I didn't know it at the time, but after I left the World Bank, I found out that the World Bank was created in order to give back the hidden wealth to all of the people in the world.
Wow. And that I got to stop you just one second real quick, because we've made a lot of comments so far that I've kind of wanted to talk about. One of the things I want to talk about really quickly is this idea that it should be okay to act like a fool while we're trying to figure out what's going on in the society. You have to dig in. You have to examine things that other people are going to tell you are not realistic. But if you don't do that, you likely will suffer from being the fool that you already are right now, because as you've mentioned, we've all consented into joining these contracts and to these obligations that we really don't know anything about, which is pretty typical of what a fool would do. So I am like you. I would rather risk asking foolish questions or looking into foolish areas, in hopes that I can learn something that will elevate me to beyond where I was before, you know, and that to me should be the goal of all enlightenment. I think a lot of people like to stigmatize ignorance as being this negative thing, and people don't celebrate learning things the way we should. We ostracize people who are quote unquote ignorant, and I don't think that that's the right way to do things. I think willful application of ignorance, that's stupidity. I don't want to go down a road with people like that, but just the simple fact of not knowing something doesn't make you a bad person. As long as you're open-minded, like Karen is suggesting, that you understand that there are pieces of information out there that you may not know, and then by learning them. But again, what you're talking about, Karen, is this transition between doing like the status quo type stuff, and this information that you're bringing to the table about the illegality of the banks, the illegality of the corporate structure. When you are presented with those situations, have to make a personal choice. Everybody, we've had this discussion on the air lots of times. Everybody has to make a personal choice, because you have to either decide once and for all that you're going to live in truth, and then you're going to recognize the truth around you, and then you're going to, you know, set your moral compass to that, or you're not. You're going to become a coward, and you're going to say, well, I know that truth exists, but I don't want to deal with it, because it's just, you know, I'm going to go the cognitive dissonance route and just completely ignore it. So I have to say, first and foremost, that I support everything that you're doing, and I definitely appreciate it, and I understand. It's really interesting to me to talk to somebody who went through Yale, who went through the legal system, who has been at the World Bank, who's now coming back and saying, wow, the legal system is not anything like what I thought it was. And how encouraging is that somebody like you can come from your background and still have the wherewithal to go through that transition, Karen? I have to tell you, I think that is a high water mark on humanity as far as I'm concerned. So.
Well, anyway. Thank you. I'm not going to take all the credit, because I've been extremely lucky and I've been really helped. If I had known from the very, very beginning what I know now, I don't know that I would have had the wherewithal. I don't know that I would have hung on. I don't know if I would have really believed that it was possible to form the coalitions that are now in place. But one of the, so I've been given information at a point that I could really use it. And for people who are trying to figure out where it is that I am, think of a switchboard operator in the middle of the international financial system, because that's what the legal department of the World Bank is.
Okay.
And I always knew that it was that. I just didn't know that the international legal system was so corrupt. The fact of the matter is that the mechanism to fix it is there. That was what I always believed in, and I discovered that was true. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that the Bretton Woods institutions were there to do good and not harm. And that is a huge discussion. There are a lot of people that say it's impossible and for people that don't know what the Bretton Woods institutions are, they're the World Bank and the IMF. It's a cooperative of 188 countries. It was created in 1944. At that time, there were only 44 countries. And what I found out is that in 1944, the person who was creating the World Bank, who was the moving force behind the World Bank, was a man named José Rizal,
okay,
who had been something called the Black Pope. That is the president of the world. That is the person who is in charge of the Jesuits.
Say, that's the Jesuit leader, right? Okay.
That's right. But this man, and by the way, he was the nephew of Queen Victoria. His father was the twin of Victoria, who went to the Philippines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Jose Rizal, and by the way, Jose Rizal was the father of Hitler and of General Yamashita.
Wow. Wow.
So,
okay.
And he's the one who, the Vatican had all this gold and wealth, the wealth of the world, King Solomon's gold and all the wealth. Think of the conquistadors taking the gold from the Aztecs.
Right.
And the Incas, that gold, okay?
Can I ask also, does this have to do with all of the alleged gold that is stored in the Philippines as well?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what it has to do with.
Perfect, okay.
All right. So what Jose Rizal did was his lawyer was Ferdinand Marcos, and they put that wealth of the world in trust for 50 years so that at the end of that 50-year period, nobody could claim it was theirs because there's a rule. It's called the statute of limitations. If you say you own something and you don't have your hands on it after 50 years, you've lost your claim. So they put it in, they sequestered it in secret for 50 years. And the idea was that after those 50 years, the Bretton Woods institutions would decide how it was going to come out for the benefit of humanity. Humanity owns their wealth.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, so I didn't know about this at the World Bank. I didn't know about that when I wanted to go to the World Bank, but I did read the Articles of Agreement, which showed that the people that were supposedly in charge of the World Bank was the countries. But it turned out that there's this banking cartel, which owns 40% of all the companies on the capital markets and pulls down 60% of their earnings. They're the central banks that print paper money for free without getting to keep the difference between what it costs to print the money and the actual face value of that money. They get to keep it. That's called seniorage. That's a scam.
Wow.
And then they charge people interest on country debt.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Ponzi.
It's the worst scam in the world.
Yes. Biggest Ponzi scheme ever. Yep.
And that group has been calling the shots in most of the countries. So that's how they managed to hijack the Bretton Woods institutions.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. But if you can take back your right to honest money, which in the United States, many presidents tried to do that and they were killed or shot for their efforts. Lincoln, Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and there were a few others. Jackson managed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he managed to do it. But anyway, and when Kennedy was going to take back the right to currency, he was using the gold that's, the U.S. has a share of that gold. It's not all of it, obviously. But every country has a share of it. And so what I managed to do, was people contacted me because here's this lawyer who thinks that the Bretton Woods institutions can be tamed, because I knew they could. I knew that the provisions in their agreement said that the countries were in charge.
Okay.
And I was fired illegally, and I was reinstated. And so people who wanted to get their hands on the gold figured that they could use me to get their hands on the gold. And what happened, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I finally did figure it out, was the 188 ministers of finance gave me their powers under this trust agreement. So I'm allowed to go in front of the interbank screens and access the world's wealth.
What? Wait. So the interbank screens, that in of itself is kind of a whole conspiratorial thing. So you're able then to look like at the actual codes and actual accounts.
But I have refused.
Okay.
I've been offered by a lot, you know, many, many groups have come to me and said, would you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I have turned them all down. I've been offered so much. You can't imagine the stuff I've been offered. And each time I've refused. And I've said that will bring us to World War III, because one of the things about the World Bank is it's a knowledge bank. And a political scientist named Yossi Kugler came to the World Bank in 2004, and he has a game theory model that predicts how coalitions will form. It predicted that the BRICS would form. It predicted that the United States would lose the gentleman's agreement to appoint the president of the World Bank if we didn't play by the rules.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it is now predicting with 90 to 95% likelihood that this banking cartel is going to be turned over by this coalition that exists.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been trying to go back into the World Bank and give the gold that everybody has a right to the countries to replace the paper currencies. And the last time I went there, I'm finally learning how to get this thing accomplished. So I went to the personnel department and I said, I need to come into the World Bank and have a meeting.
Right.
So they let me in. This was last week. And then I said, okay, now I'm not leaving because nobody has the right to throw me out. I'm the acting general counsel. And they took the security guards named Allied Barton that's owned by the banking cartel, and the security guards, 15 of them, these huge goons, you know, threw me out, and they were going to call the D.C. police. And if people haven't followed this, the District of Columbia is not part of the United States.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the D.C. police are just employees of the banking cartel.
Yep.
So I had already gone to I live in Montgomery County, which is in Maryland, and I had gone to the county executive, Ike Leggett, and I had said to him that I wanted protection because I've already been arrested and thrown into jail and handcuffed by the D.C. police, and I didn't want a repeat of that. So I said, you've got a protocol in place that the Montgomery and the Prince George's County county executive is also a member of something called the County Executives of America. This group has accepted the gold that belongs to the United States in the global debt facility. So we're very, very close to replacing Federal Reserve.
Wow.
Notes. Very, very close. But anyway, so when I was thrown out, I left, obviously. I wasn't going to allow the DC police to get their hands on me.
Uh-huh.
So I left. And then I had my computer with me. I sent an email to the head of the Human Resources Department, and I said, I was meeting with you, and how did those goons get involved? You know, you better readmit me. And he didn't let me in. And then I called up the Dutch executive director, and I spoke to somebody in his office, and I found out that the emails that I had been sending them had been intercepted illegally. They had no right to do that.
Wow.
So I went home and I faxed everybody, and then I tweeted the faxes. And what I did, I've been in touch with all these people because I'm tweeting all of this stuff. So everybody sees just what's going on.
Right.
So one of the people named Kathleen, said, is there anything I can do for you now? And she had already gotten in touch with her county executive and gotten them to call up Ike Leggett to see if Ike Leggett would get Montgomery County Police to keep the D.C. police from arresting me.
Okay, Karen,
I've
got to interrupt you. I apologize. When we come back, we'll pick up that story with Kathleen and kind of what's going on with the D.C. police. We've got to take a quick 3-minute break. We come back, we'll be talking more about this global trust of wealth for humanity. I can't tell you how much I love this conversation. Karen, thank you for being here. We'll be right back. 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it right here.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
sure am glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Baker Show.
Monday through Friday, Truth Frequency Radio.
We got a 3-minute break. Karen Udis is my very special guest today. And before the break, we were talking about some of the rough treatment that she has gotten at the hands of the D.C. police. Karen, do you want to pick up that story? You were just mentioning a lady named Kathleen before we went to the break.
Right. Actually, let me start out by saying, what does the global trust mean to people?
Yes.
So that they understand what it is that I'm battling and why it might make a difference to them.
Okay.
3 months out of every year is about what you're working to pay your income taxes.
Yes.
That's a scam.
Yeah, to say the least.
what I'm doing is I'm giving you back your 3 months because and Ronald Reagan did a study on that. It was in something called the Grace Commission. He wanted to see where was our income taxes going. It was going to pay interest on the country debt.
All of it. Every dime. Yep.
Yeah. Which is a scam.
Yeah.
There's no reason to pay those bankers a penny. They don't deserve it. There's no reason for you to be paying interest on country debt. And in the global debt facility, one of the things that's there are some certificates, $210 trillion worth of certificates, because there was gold that was bought from the royalty using those certificates. And they carry interest, which has been compounding since the 30s.
Right. I have to interject for just a quick second because you brought up a topic that I wanted to touch on real quick. Remember the report that came out, I think it was from Italy. It was the middle of last year where they discovered or supposedly discovered a bunch of guys with fake bonds. They had like $6 trillion in fake bonds and they were saying, oh, it's completely fake. But these guys had somehow gone to the extent of creating the fake serialized trunk that the Fed would have issued back in the 1930s. I mean, just absolutely crazy how much wealth is actually floating around out there in the world, and then it ends up the news and they're saying, oh, they're fake, but there's just no way, in my opinion, that those were fake. What is your opinion on that situation, if you could comment?
Okay, there's a guy named Wilfredo Soren who got his hands on those illegally because they're in trust, and he gave them to Neil Keenan.
Yes.
This guy was there to confuse everybody, all right?
Okay.
And Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
So those were real bonds.
But not in the right hands.
That's right. They, okay. They were stolen. They belonged to everybody.
Okay.
In this global debt facility. All right. And so it's now in the accrued interest on those bonds now in the quadrillions.
Wow.
And that is going to offset the country debt. So these central banks are bankrupt. They owe us more money than we owe them. They cannot meet their obligations when they fall due. They're bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reality. The reality is that these groups that are charging us interest are not entitled to it. It's illegal.
Yes.
And I am the lawyer who can take it's not just gold and other precious metals and these bonds that I'm talking about. It's also the art treasures of the world.
Right.
There were some Matisse paintings that Ferdinand Marcos's maid had sold. They also belong to humanity. She was convicted of theft. Yeah, those belong to us. So what am I doing? I am trying to get the wealth that belongs to all of humanity to be used. And where am I trying to use it? When I went to Tokyo during the summer, because don't forget there's the U.S. military. What role is the U.S. military playing in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
There are some traitors at the very top. That's the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey. And that's also John Reimer, who is the, Inspector General of the Department of Defense. These guys are something called Knights of Malta. They're not doing their real jobs, which is to protect the United States. Because I asked Martin Dempsey if he was trying to defend the United States and make the United States strong, why wasn't he accepting this gold in the global debt facility that John F. Kennedy had accessed so that we would get rid of these Federal Reserve notes?
Mm-hmm.
And he had two town hall meetings. He refused to answer my questions. And Veterans Today, I'm sorry to say, to tell everybody, Veterans Today is just part of this global group that's trying to keep everybody from accessing their true wealth.
Wow.
They like to tell, for people that aren't following all of this, it's very confusing because these groups tell half-truths. They'll tell you stories to make you believe that they're good guys. And then they'll hit you with a zinger that you don't realize is their ulterior motive. They have a hidden agenda.
Right.
And that's what Veterans Today is. They're trying to keep Martin Dempsey in place.
Hmm.
They're trying to keep John Reimer in place. Those guys are trying to keep you from getting your gold. Okay? So let's go back now to where I was talking about where things are
The
World Bank. Okay?
Okay.
So all the countries of the world know that I'm there trying to give them their gold, and they're waiting to see what I'm going to do, whether I'm going to be able, you know, they told me a long time ago in 2009, they said, Karen, you have to get through to the American people. And I left, and I sort of, you know, I didn't know about the gold in the global debt facility.
Right.
I didn't know that I was going to be given the right to access that gold. I have that right. And everybody is asking me to do it so they can get in ahead of everybody.
Okay.
But the point is, if that happens, we have World War III. It's got to be like raising a tent where everybody at the same time understands that they're going to be getting that gold. And what I'm trying to do is just not to make it easy for the crooks and thieves to continue to stay in power. So I'm trying to reduce the size of the footprint. Don't forget, the Bretton Woods institutions have got to be transformed from bad to good. This isn't going to be easy.
Right.
And so you have to find a mechanism so that it's not going to be easy to steal the gold from everybody.
So
but that we can get rid of the Federal Reserve.
Is that your task then? Is to create the foundation by which you can disseminate all this and make it happen?
I already did. Okay, I wrote to all of the ministers of finance in the summer, and I said, here is the agreement where you're going to replace your paper currency for something called aurum, which is you take gold and you press it very, very thin, and you put it in an envelope, and it handles just like regular currency, and the amount of the gold is exactly equivalent to the face value of what that currency is. And you don't pay interest on it. So you get good, honest money, mm-hmm. and you're not going to be paying interest on it. And you're going to take these central banks, which are just part of this corrupt network, the one that the three mathematicians at the Federal Institute of Technology documented. These crooks thought we were too stupid to find out that they were in control of all the capital markets. But we found out because of this wonderful study. Yeah? And we also know from a power transition model that came from the Department of Defense that coalitions would form that would be stronger than this corrupt group. And people call it lots of things. They call it the cabal. They call it the Bank for International Settlement. Mm-hmm. Some people, at the very heart of it, you've got the Vatican Bank. So it's got the Jesuits involved.
Wow.
And behind that, actually, there are what they call the Zoroastrian bloodlines.
Yes.
These are families that have been in power for a long time. The House of Borgia, House of Breakspear, House of Somaglia, Orsini, Conti, Chigi, Colonna, Farnese, Medici, Gaetani, Panfili, Esti, and Aldo Brandini. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you have got this power-mongering group that has been in hidden control and set this system up. And people are now thinking about the transition, and they've said, you know, these people have put a very intricate system into place using centuries. How are we going to turn this around? And the point is, I'll tell you how we're going to turn it around. First of all, we're going to get rid of these paper currencies with the gold currencies. And it's not just that currency. The most important currency is actually the local currency. There's something called legal tender laws, which says that somebody else can decide what you're allowed to use as money. And you just get rid of that. And you leave it up to people what money they want to use. And the most important money is actually the local currency, which is in the local areas. You have all the businesses agree what the local currency will be, and that generates a lot of employment.
Right.
There's an economist named Silvio Giselle who invented a very good way of doing this, but you can do it whichever way you want. But the main thing is that the Bretton Woods institutions, the World Bank, and the IMF should not be there to have a one-world government,
right,
to tell people what to do. We'll keep the existing governments, the existing nations. They're the ones that are going to continue. And there, you know, I've gotten a lot of what you call First Nation people and splinter groups telling me, well, why don't you recognize me and give me my gold? And I've said to them, it's not my job. It's not my job. And if I start doing that, then I'm not going to get to first base because no country is going to deal with me
right.
if I'm dealing behind their back with splinter groups. And you know, when they wrote the articles of the World Bank, they understood that this was going to happen, and they have a special provision in there that says that the World Bank is not supposed to intervene in political activities in the internal affairs of the countries.
Wow.
So so we've got the institutions, we've got the mechanisms, and let me tell you where things are with the U.S. court system, because we were talking about this, how the courts are really not what they're pretending to be.
Correct.
They're pretending to be real courts.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually, the judges in those courts are simply employees of a company that calls itself the United States that was created in 1871 when they created the District of Columbia.
Correct.
And so I had a case in the District of Columbia court. I had actually started it in Maryland, and they moved it into the District of Columbia. And that case was settled by 188 ministers of finance, and the court refused to accept that.
Really?
Yeah. That was in 2012. I was reinstated in 2012, and I couldn't get in because of Allied Barton. But anyway, so when I found out about this book and the invisible contracts that this former clerk of New York wrote, and he wrote it on the internet. So I went to the court on December 31st, and I said, okay, now I know that you guys were just masquerading and you're really crooks.
Yeah.
And I said, how are we going to get this situation regularized. So they said, okay, well, file another document in the courts. So I did. And then I just heard yesterday from the Court of Appeals. I had heard on the 5th of January from the district court, but they didn't bother to tell me. I went back on the 10th, and that's when I found out that they had snuck in a memorandum decision. So anyway,
wow.
I then said, okay, that's a wrong decision. You've refused to acknowledge your fraud. And what I did on the 8th of January was I wrote to Janet Yellen. I wrote her a letter and I said, you, Federal Reserve, do not own any gold that belongs to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gold is in the global debt facility. You're lying to everybody. You're cheating. And I also copied all of the ministers of finance. Yeah. So the legally the charade is up. So now the question is, the court then came back to me and said, okay, well, you can't make us do anything. So then I realized that these judges have bonds.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they won't give me the name of the insurance company.
Right.
So I went to all the association of all the insurers and I said, okay, I'm going to be filing, damages. And those are pretty considerable damages because this is a pretty big fraud.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, so, then they said, well, we're not going to tell you because this is public information. Well, I got the regulations that show, no, this is not public information. And I just put that out on the internet and I said, you've been lying to me. So now I'm not just filing against the, bond of the, judge. Who's the one who gave that decision? I'm also filing against the bond of the chief judge, Judge
nice.
Roberts. Yeah. And I'm also filing against the clerk in the Court of Appeals who just did his decision. Anyway, but I don't have the name of the insurance company. So what I'm going to do now, I'm just going to file commercial liens against these individuals.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what I'm going to do. So that's what's going on there. And, because I tweet all of this and I've had various videos that are out on the internet and the counting is really crazy. There'll be a lot of hits when I go to sleep and then the next morning all of a sudden they've erased, the numbers of hits.
Right,
so
right.
It's pretty safe to say now that enough people know what's going on that things, they're retweeting it and it's viral. So everybody knows what's going on. And as a result, people are coming in and they're commenting and raising very interesting, difficult issues.
Uh-huh.
And so if you look at what I've tweeted today, that's at Karen Hudis, you'll see that there's a very thoughtful German fellow who has really asked some very, very good questions. And one of his questions is, okay, so you have shown that there's no consent and you have shown that even on their own wacky legal terms, they've lost, you've won, but they're not going to do anything.
Right.
What do we do next? What do we do next? And that is a very good question.
Uh-huh.
It's an excellent question. What I have said is because of this power transition model, which predicts that these coalitions will form, that we have a coalition in the United States that is stronger. It's stronger. And the internet is... There's a critical mass that knows that the people that are holding on to power are just, they're insufferable. We have shown that they are just, the emperor's clothes are off. That's
yes.
the way this German fellow wrote it.
Yep.
There is no fig leaf there. There is no right. This is just, they're just governing by sheer force. They have lost their consent. And in the United States, there's something called Article 5, which is when 2/3 of the state legislatures ask for an amendment of the Constitution. That shows that we, the people, on whose government, they have to have consent of we, the people, to continue in power.
That's
so
right.
We have taken away our consent, and they are now no longer a legitimate government. And we're in something called an interregnum. So we're in transition, and... What I have been saying to people is that at least in the United States, we have a way to get ourselves back on track. And in the interim, what I've said is that our county executives are the ones that are the legitimate government, because 700 of the counties are governed by executives that are elected directly by the people, and they have an association, and that is the association that accepted the gold to replace the Federal Reserve notes.
Okay, I want to get back onto that topic for just a second, because I know in the news recently I saw an article about IMF going back to what they're calling a Plan B. Are you working with them? Are you getting support from the IMF as you're going through this process? And does that Plan B have something to do with everything that we're talking about? And what do you think the ultimate outcome is going to be from all of this?
Okay, the IMF right now, whatever you're reading about the IMF is just the banking cartel.
Okay.
Yeah, and the look at what's going on as an indicator. Look at what's going on with Dominique Strauss-Kahn, because whatever his sexual proclivities, he was actually asking questions about the gold in the global debt facility. He was trying to do his real job, and that was why they had to get rid of him.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, but he wasn't such a great guy either, because you know I went to him. And Robert Zoellick, who was the president of the World Bank, who fired me, had done some really stupid things with the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. By the way, if anybody doesn't realize it, the Congress is actually acting in the interests of the banking cartel.
Oh, yeah.
They're employees of the banking cartel, and they have been declaring a military state of emergency every single year since 1861 without bothering to tell the American public.
That's right. Remember, they're paid agents of a corporation. You just have to remember that. And that's what makes the State of the Union address so poignant, is because you have to recognize that that guy who's talking is talking to his bondholders and his, the people who own stake in the corporation known as the United States. And when you listen to what these guys are saying, it makes a lot of sense that they're talking from the perspective of a president, of a CEO, or, of a corporation.
No, it's much worse than that, because the Secret Service is, they're going to kill him if he does anything out of line.
Right? Wow.
Yeah? The Secret Service, the chair of the something called a development committee, which is 25 ministers of finance, has been giving me badges to go into the annual meetings and the spring meetings. All of the ministers of finance on the board of governors get together twice a year. And so I've been admitted, I've gone into the meetings, and then I've been evicted. And at one point, the Secret Service wrote, I wrote a letter to Julia Pearson to say, you had no authority to do that. I'm allowed to go in. I was given a security badge by the chair of the Board of Governors. What authority do you have to take that away? You don't. Anyway, so the Secret Service, and by the way, they also tried to take me off the internet. They tried to take me off the internet. They were accusing me of cyber crimes. So I went to the Montgomery County Police, and I complained. I said, I'm not, they're the crooks, they're the criminals, I'm not doing any cyber crimes.
Right.
And they allowed me to stay on the internet. So, I mean, you can see I have a little bit of, they know who's really in charge.
Right.
It's the people. They are just, but what I've been doing, it's a little bit like surfing. You can't get ahead of the wave. What's the wave? The wave is the level of understanding of people.
Right. Okay.
And so I have got to, and by the way, JD, thanks for having me on.
Because
I have got to be able to keep people informed about what's going on and bring new people into this level of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's important for me to have dialogue with people so that people can hold me accountable. I am not doing anything on my own. I never do. I ask people, I consult, I try to figure out where we all are, and I can't get out ahead of anybody.
Right.
I've got to be part of the group. Or I'll crash. And there won't be, any way for us to reclaim our wealth. So I can't go any faster than the level of awareness. Also, my own level of awareness.
Right.
I have to know to what extent people are with me on what it is I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to say that we are really doing very, very well because of the kinds of information that people are giving me and the kinds of questions that they're asking, which I have to answer. I have to be able to answer in a credible way.
Right.
So it's a dialogue. All of this is a dialogue. And so where I think we are, by the way, it hasn't been easy. You know, people say, well, how can you still be carrying on? They've been pulling some pretty nasty tricks.
Really?
One of the things they did yesterday, they break into my house and they steal things and they stole my keys. I couldn't use my car yesterday. I had to go out for errands. I had to call my, I'm separated from my husband. He just didn't like being part of this project. I can't blame him. There have been some really terrible things on the internet attacking him. And it's just been abominable. But anyway, but we're on reasonably good terms. And I said, I can't find my keys. I didn't tell him that they were stolen out of the house. So he had a spare set. And then I came home and there somebody had put the keys back on the floor in my bedroom. You know, they were in my purse.
Right.
And I had been up in my bedroom before. But anyway, that's the kind of stuff and, you know, really nasty things. The horrible things happen to me too.
Hmm.
I get knocked down. I get punched. That happened to me in the synagogue. You know, maybe I'll talk for 2 minutes about religion because this is going to be, as going forward, this is going to be very difficult.
Okay.
Because the group that has been seizing power, some of them are claiming to be Jews. They're not religious. They're not Jewish.
Right.
They are just horrible, awful people.
We call them Zionists around here.
Whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
But there are Jewish people who are sincerely religious and don't know anything about what these crooks are doing. And they're going to be blamed for that. But there's also a religious component. You know, I was just talking to some people about whether the Jews are the chosen people and whether anybody's out ahead of anybody else. And this is, you know, this is not good. And I'm in this conversation with people as far as the gold goes all the time. There are people who are saying, well, you know, we're the ones that are entitled to a bigger share than everybody else. Nobody's chosen and nobody's entitled to more gold than anybody else.
Right. I could not agree with you more on that. I mean, we've had many, many discussions on the show. You know, I've talked to Anna Balzer. We've talked about the occupation of Palestine quite a bit on the show. And I've read enough to understand where the creation of Israel came from and who was behind that movement. I don't think we've only got a minute left anyway, so I don't really want to get too deep into that right now. But I definitely want to give you an opportunity. I want to let everybody know too, kahudes.net. kahudes.net is where you can go find Karen, and I definitely would encourage people to follow you via tweet. We've got about 30 seconds left, Karen. Anything else you would like to leave us with today? I would definitely like to get you back on as soon as humanly possible, if that's okay with you.
I'd love that. I have a contact page on my website, and mm-hmm. I do respond to all the emails. So if you have questions, but when I say I respond, I'm not there to be your pen pal. So I'll probably respond, but if you're coming back to me and asking for education, what I will say is get yourself into a group of friends and learn how to be discerning and keep up with us because we are going to have a lot to do to fix things.
Wow. Well, Karen, thank you again for joining us on the program today. I cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for having me on, JD.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have squandered another 2 hours listening to some amazing information. Appreciate you guys all being here. Tomorrow, James Perloff will be on the show. He'll be talking about the history of terrorism and the Cold War and things like that. So definitely tune in tomorrow. We'll see you then. Take care, everybody.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.